Hey guys, welcome to another episode of The Football Corner. My name is Vikram and I have Mr. Bharat Kapoor sitting next to me. Bharat, say what up to the people.
What up, people?
This episode, we're going to be talking about two rounds of fixtures that happened over the course of the new year and currently ongoing still. We're also going to be talking a little bit about whether VAR should be introduced into EPL or not, and our prediction for an exciting game next week, and then jump into a little bit about Indian football. If you guys are listening to this episode, that means you love football, just like us. You should come check out our Facebook group, The Football Corner, where we talk about all things football.
That's right, guys. There's going to be lots of memes, lots of trolls, and obviously our polls and predictions are going to be up there. Or conversely, you can tweet to us at Football Babas. That's Football Babas, B-A-B-A-S.
Looking forward to seeing you guys there. This episode of The Football Corner is sponsored by Maker's Box, a makerspace in Sprout Box, Surya Vilas in New Delhi. If you're an inventor, a creator, or love doing DIY hands-on projects, then you must come check the space out. You can find more details on makersbox.in or in our show notes. Let's jump right in. The first match we're going to be talking about, Bharat, is Arsenal and Chelsea.
What a rip snorter, Vicky. What a cracking game.
That was a fun game, man. I mean, the first half was fun because it was offensive, a lot of chances and stuff. But the second half, just floodgates just opened.
It just reminded me, it just took me back to the Arsenal-Liverpool game. Maybe not as sort of one-sided in bits, but this was one of the most open games that I've seen. I remember talking about Arsenal United and we were like, okay, that's the best game of the season. I think that's been trumped by this simply because both teams really wanted to win this game. And that's usually not the case in such an important derby. You know, this is a London derby. It's two of the top six going against each other and both of them just wanted to win. Super entertaining stuff. Loved it.
The second half though, man, it was a goal fest. I mean, all of the chances that both these teams had in the first half started to capitalize on that and convert from that. So game ended 2-2, but there were a few incidents there which made Mr. Wenger angry yet again.
He's always angry. His team doesn't perform too well or doesn't take his chances, and then his defense is always creaking against good teams. So he's always moaning.
Yeah, but the last 2 weeks, the moaning just went next level, didn't it?
I feel for him though, because that West Brom penalty was not a penalty in a million years. Anyway, we're going to get to that.
Okay, let's talk about it for a second here. Okay, Chambers handball, alleged handball, wasn't a penalty, sure. But his reaction to that, you can't go into the referee's changing room and call them referees from the dark ages or just apparently got abusive and stuff like that. He's obviously charged by the FA, the hearings in a couple of days. Let's see what happens there. But he came out with a statement post this game as well, saying that the penalty they conceded was farcical. So he needs to tone down a little bit. I feel like he just wants a stadium ban or something like that, which definitely is going to come. At least a couple of matches are going to get there. But he needs to calm down, man. His team's not doing well. It's never been the greatest team ever. So chill.
He doesn't want a stadium ban. Okay. So he doesn't want a stadium ban. He's going to get a stadium ban. Most likely he's going to get a touchline ban at least a touchline ban. That's the minimum repercussions we're going to see for his two outbursts that he's had.
Mm-hmm.
I feel for him on the first one. The second one, not so much, because it could have gone either way. There's contact and
studs up in the box. Yeah. That's a penalty in my book.
It is a pen in my book as well. Yeah, Hazard has a tendency to roll around and go down easily. But any other area of the pitch, that's free kick. It's a penalty.
100%. I 100% think that the second one was a penalty. His reaction to that was, compared to the first one, way more muted. But regardless of whether he's such an experienced coach. He's now the most experienced coach in Premier League history. He's been there, done that. You cannot have a reaction like that, whether you think it's a penalty or not. You can't go to the referees changing locker and start like blasting them. And calm down. You're old, you're experienced. You need to show some maturity there, right?
In his defense, he just overtook Sir Alex Ferguson's record of 810 Premier League games. Sir Alex Ferguson never got these decisions against him at Old Trafford. He got those decisions for him. He never used to be at the end of those decisions. He used to be celebrating because of those decisions. So I'll have to give him that. That despite all that, he's not been able to manipulate the press and referees like Sir Alex Ferguson used to do. And Man United fans, you can totally hate on me for this, but it's true and you know it's true. That SAF used to influence referees.
Not, okay, understood, because his presence is so, it's huge and it's commanding and stuff like that. But there have been penalties that went against him in his career. There have to have been, right? In tight matches. It's not like every decision was pro-United whenever Sir Alex Ferguson was managing. There must have been a penalty that must have gone against him. You think he would have barged into the... Actually, he might have. Never know with that guy.
I think without looking at the numbers, I'm fairly certain that most of the decisions went for him rather than against him, especially in the latter stages of the matches. When United needed a goal or they were pressing for an equalizer or for a winner, he usually more often than not got those decisions. I remember two of them against Tottenham where they were soft penalties and he got both of them.
You're probably right. But coming back to this game, I want to talk about what Arsenal and Chelsea lost out on. Arsenal lost out on provisionally going fifth place over Tottenham, but Chelsea lost out on going second over United. They're now a point behind United and on even games. So I think that's a big miss, but a game against Arsenal, a game like that, coming away with 1 point, it's not that bad a result.
As a Liverpool fan, I was super ecstatic about the result. Before the game, I was actually thinking to myself, what result do I want as a Liverpool fan? And all three were fine with me.
I think as a Liverpool fan, Arsenal's winning would have been best for you, right? Because then Chelsea stays at 45, Liverpool's just a point behind them, and it just makes their chase for second much easier.
Yeah, but looking at Liverpool's inconsistencies under Klopp, right now if you give me top four, I'll take it.
Sounds about right, man. So the reason we've been talking about second and third and fourth is because there's a team sitting up front, which is unrelenting, and that's Man City. Man City, over the past two game weeks, they played Palace, a 0-0 draw there, and they played Watford with a 3-1 win. The 0-0 draw, though, coming back to that one, tight game, man. City almost could have lost that one. What do you think?
City should have lost that one, and Milivojevic, who's usually very reliable, and thank God Benteke didn't take that penalty, otherwise he would have been gone from Palace had he missed that penalty for sure. Milivojevic, awful penalty, absolutely awful penalty. I was jumping up and down. I was super happy. I was like, okay, 92nd, 93rd minute. City, there's no way they're going to win this one. The worst that's going to happen is he misses the penalty and it's going to be a draw. And well, he missed the penalty and City started countering. And then there was a horror challenge by Punchin on KDB. As much as you want Man City to slow down, you don't want to see these challenges in the game, especially to players of the caliber of KDB, because you don't want to lose one of the best players in the world to a malicious challenge. And I felt it was quite malicious. He just wanted to stop him in his tracks. Lo and behold, Punchin's out for the season and KDB came back in the next game.
Next game, dude. That's pretty impressive. I got a little bit of scare personally just because I love seeing him, and also for Guardiola. He's been that bedrock in midfield for Guardiola, and we actually predicted this. Well, not predicted, we spoke about it, that challenges and injuries are the only way that Man City are going to slow down. Speaking of injuries to Man City, Jesus got a bad injury, a ligament tear in his knee, and possibly out for a couple of months. It's a big loss for City, even though it doesn't seem like it on paper, but the contributions he makes to that team and what he does when he comes on, instead of Aguero, he plays down that left, he pulls back for defense and stuff. It's a big loss for City, I think.
It probably is. He's probably just like Jesus Christ, he's suffering for other people's sins. And probably one of the reasons why KDB came back so fast. Jesus. There was this Jesus effect. But he's probably going to be back by the time City restart their Champions League campaign. And I think till then, Aguero can easily deputize. Well, what deputize? I mean, Aguero's going to be starting every game pretty much from now on.
That's true. I think another injury to City, one of their core members, I think that's when it'll get really, really tricky for Guardiola to figure out how to keep going or keep the steam. It's still a big loss, I feel, to City, because now Guardiola has one lesser option up front. And whenever he needs to rest Aguero, he'll probably have to keep playing that false nine, which I'm sure he'll handle pretty well still.
I don't think he needs to rest Aguero now. Probably won't play him in the FA Cup. But every other fixture there is now till the Champions League campaign starts, there's not much going on. I'm not sure. They are still in the League Cup. So they'll have League Cup commitments coming up. So let's see how Guardiola juggles his squad, his tactics and his formations. But an injury to, say, a Sterling or a KDB could really, you know, put a spanner in the work and ensure that they, instead of winning three or four trophies this season, maybe just end up winning one or two, which, well...
Ooh, how sad.
That's so sad.
Talking about City's neighbors, a certain Manchester United.
Are they the noisy neighbors now, do you think? Considering how vocal and noisy Moo can be in press conferences and...
Oh, man, he's... I mean, we haven't even started talking about the game and we're talking about Mourinho and...
No, you know how much I hate him.
I do, but we'll talk more about why you hate him a little bit after we talk about the matches they played. They played Southampton and Everton the last two match weeks. Southampton was a fun 0-0 draw, I would say.
Super fun.
So much fun. I took a couple of naps during that game. Had a few drinks, had some wine while watching it. The game against Everton, though, that was pretty exciting. That ended with a 2-0. 2-0 without Lukaku, though.
I actually liked the look of United without Lukaku, and I had a feeling that this might happen if he plays pacey boys up front. You know, he played Martial. Obviously, Lingard is a similar player. Mata loves moving around the pitch and filling pockets of space. So it was a very fluid front three in the second half, at least. And Pogba just bossed that midfield, like, can't touch this.
It was fun to see Pogba coming into his own this game. He played, I think, one of the better matches of his season so far. He had two assists there, but very controlled and controlling game that he played from midfield. He was peppering his passes. He was controlling the pace. He was the focal point of the ball going forward. So I was pretty happy to see him. I think this is one of the few times I've seen Pogba do what he did at maybe a Juve. Maybe, I think he's done it like thrice or four times ever since he's come. Ever since then, like the first season was, oh, he's settling and this and that. And then the second season, he got that gap mid-season of not playing. So I think this game, it was pretty reassuring for Mourinho and for United fans.
I kind of disagree with you on that one. As an analyst, I don't look at pure numbers. Even though, you know, statistics should form the base of what inferences you make about the game and patterns of play. But there are a lot of qualitative things that he brings to the pitch. And I really feel that Mourinho and United should build a team around Pogba rather than any other individual in that squad. Because he has the ability to be world-class. He has all the physical attributes. He has all the technical attributes. It's just, I think it's a bit of a mental game with him as well as a bit of a tactical game with him that you need to sort of sort out. I don't like going against what a certain ginger prince, Paul Scholes, says. But I still feel that Pogba will prove value for money simply because of his age and the fact that he's nowhere close to his prime right now. He's going to come into his prime in the next 3, 4, 5 years.
That part I agree with. But coming back to what Paul Scholes said, he said it, I think, after the United-Southampton game and before the United-Everton game. And up until then, you could see Pogba just... I mean, it's just the way he runs. I feel personally that him and Ozil, the way they run, the way they conduct themselves on pitch, it gives an air of being indifferent towards the game, right? Which is obviously not the case. But Pogba honestly wasn't doing much in that Southampton game especially. And I don't completely disagree with everything Paul Scholes did. But you know who does? Mr. Jose.
Honestly, Mourinho's teams are known for their balance. He knows exactly how to set up his team to not concede goals and score 1-2. And 1-2 goals usually wins a game for a Mourinho team. His balance has not been right again in those three draws that he got. It was, I believe, it was Southampton, Burnley and Leicester. And two of them were at Old Trafford, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
I think two of them were at Old Trafford. So I think he's having a bit of a balance problem right now. And obviously the individual errors don't help. Lukaku, case in point.
Oh, so you think they won this game because Lukaku wasn't on the pitch?
Well, possibly. The fact that he wasn't defending a corner or a set piece.
Or like scoring own goals or something.
Because Big Sam is known for scoring from set pieces and working on set pieces. So I think if...
Talking as if Big Sam sitting on the pitch, heading the ball in directly himself.
Yeah, but what happens when Lukaku completely misses the ball and he's the one who's attacking that zone and marking that player?
So safe to say we're attributing United's first win in 4 games to Lukaku not being on the pitch and...
Defensively.
Zero defensive errors. That's an interesting outlook. Mourinho, I think he kind of held back when he was criticizing Paul Scholes. It's kind of ironic because he said that Paul Scholes, all he does is criticize. But I think because Paul Scholes was who he was, especially for United, if it was someone else who was a great for some other team, Mourinho would have been on it for like 5 minutes. You could feel him, like he was in rant mode.
I mean, that's classic Mourinho, isn't it? You put him under pressure and press conferences, it just shows. He's not the special one anymore. He's not the happy one anymore. And he just does not seem to be doing too well with the press these days. You know, in his last few months at Chelsea, his 2 years at United now. I think he's lost, like, coaches lose the dressing room. I think he's lost the press.
I don't know, man. I think it's just a very testing... I think this is the most testing season he's ever had because of the way City's playing. And because it's Pep sitting on top of him right there. And because of that, you can see cracks. But I don't think he's lost the press completely. It just has to do with how the next season goes or how he conducts himself. But Mourinho, he's a dramatic guy.
Will he even be there next season?
Oh, interesting question. I think he might be, though.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Moving on from United. Well, happy time for you now, Bharat. We're talking about Liverpool.
Woohoo!
Have I congratulated you on VVD yet?
I think you have.
Well, congratulations again.
Thank you.
It's a butt ton of money that you guys have spent, and let's hope he works out for you.
I'm going to get a butt ton for Coutinho, so...
Ooh. I like the resignation there. I mean, being a fan, I would have been like, oh man, yeah, he probably won't leave. We get another player.
Bro, I'm a realistic, pragmatic person.
Okay, realistically speaking, how much do you think you're going to get for him?
I'd say 130-ish with reasonable add-ons, unlike the ones Barcelona put in front of Liverpool in the summer, which is stupid.
Okay, and realistically, who do you think is going to buy him?
I just said it. The poachers.
Oh,
Barcelona.
Man. That Nike leak midweek was so much fun to just like watch how it unraveled. And social media is like, oh, someone's going to get fired for this. That's
bollocks, man. That's absolute bollocks. That's a planned stunt. That's a PR stunt.
100%.
And it's just, I mean, don't even get me started, man. I can hate on Barca so much.
Oh, no. Please get started.
I mean, what the hell? Who the hell do they think they are? Yeah, fine. You know what? They've probably been... along with Real, the best club in the last 10 years in Europe. But believe me, clubs have cycles. And Barcelona fans who are my age don't realize that because they've only seen the good times of their club. Bad times come too. And believe me, when your bad time comes, it's not going to be pretty.
I like, why are you talking about Barcelona's bad time? Because they just try to mastermind a move for Coutinho. Like, I understand they use all of these channels which are outside of the general channels for like...
Outside of the general channels.
Yeah, it's
Coutinho talking about how his comrades in Spain are already looking for a house for him in Barcelona. And
that always happens.
Neymar has done this before. Is it a Brazilian thing? I mean, Dani Alves did it for Neymar going to... Is it a Brazilian thing?
Maybe. But... using your players to sort of get the mills churning in terms of who's coming, who's going. That's a classic move, I think. And the whole Nike thing, though, Nike's done that before. By the way, they did it with Paulinho as well for Barcelona. So
yeah,
I think
Paulinho the savior.
I think well, Paulinho's having a good season in Barcelona, by the way.
Yeah, he is.
But it was fun. And what was the best part about this entire incident was Klopp's reaction to it. He got asked in a press conference of what he thinks about this, and he's like, I'm not interested, in like the most monotonic voice ever.
I mean, he's resigned to it as well, right? He knows, and when you're talking about, you know, putting the wheels in motion by players saying all this, and Barcelona trying to maneuver a move, bollocks, man. Coutinho has his heart set on a move. Everybody knows he's put in a transfer request.
They're just trying to cement that, making sure that it happens. Because I don't know, I'm not sure if this is going to happen during the January break or the summer. I can't even actually, I'm on the fence. It could happen either, probably in the summer, makes more sense. Coutinho's played well for Liverpool ever since the whole transfer thing's happening. He's been clear about the fact that whenever he's on pitch, he wants to give it his best. And he obviously loves Liverpool. Liverpool's given him a lot, vice versa as well. So I think it might happen in the summer. And
I think it'll be quietly agreed behind the scenes. Like the Suarez deal was agreed. Like the Naby Keita deal. Well, Liverpool did that deal from Red Bull Leipzig. I think it's going to be agreed quietly behind the scenes. And it's going to be released sometime close to the summer. I'm guessing there's a World Cup in the offing. And Coutinho is definitely going for that, barring injuries. I think he's probably going to want to sort that out before the World Cup or after the World Cup. So either way, I think there's going to be a pre-contract, you know, a pre-agreement happening in the next few weeks that we're not going to know too much about. And Liverpool's just going to be like, listen, guys, you know what? We want this much. Pay it. Take him in the summer. We're not releasing him right now. Big shit. Take him in the summer.
Probably. And I think that gives more light into why Barcelona is trying to, well, use all of these tactics to sort of cement or make sure publicly, privately, that Coutinho is coming. So, Nike leak, I think stuff like this needs to stop. It's completely, completely unprofessional. And it's clear as day that it's not a mistake. It cannot be a mistake, obviously. It's such a big thing.
Whatever, man. I mean, just word to Barcelona fans, what goes around comes around. Believe me, it always
does. Okay, all right, Mr. Prophet. Talking about the actual football games that happened, Liverpool ended up playing Burnley this week, winning 2-1. And they also had a 2-1 victory over Leicester last week.
I'm actually way happier to see these victories than see 3-0, 4-0. Obviously, I'm entertained and I'm elated when those happen. But these 2-1s are hard-fought. They show character. A certain word that a certain Brendan Rodgers used to throw around a lot. Anyway, they do show character. They show resolve. And they show the soft side of the game, which is equally important. You know, Klopp has to inculcate that into his team to sort of even think about challenging for the title next season. Obviously not this season, thanks to a certain Baldy. So I'm very happy with both the wins. The one against Leicester was a really fighting win because Liverpool kept on pressing. And you know, you really have to keep on playing and at the same time be wary of Leicester's threat on the counter, because they really pose a threat on the counter with the pace of Vardy and the vision and the dribbling of Mahrez. So, you know, keep playing and coming away with the 3 points there was super important. And then the Burnley one. Oh my God, that was just so epic.
That was a game without Salah. Salah was out injured and Coutinho wasn't playing as well, right?
No Firmino, no Coutinho, no Salah. So
I think that's a tougher victory than the Leicester one, especially against a side like Burnley who just grind out, like just sit there and like absorb. And Ragnar Klavan,
man, I mean, as much as Klavan will get the kudos for that, it's that goal is all Lovren. I mean, that man can attack a ball. Why doesn't he do that in his own penalty area? Why does he do that in the other penalty area? We saw that against Dortmund in that classic match in the Europa League semi-final a couple of seasons back, Klopp's first season in charge. And this, I mean, you have no idea how hard it is to direct that ball towards goal with enough pace on it and the direction on it. Klavan didn't even need to touch the ball. It was going in. But I have to give it to both of them. They're very maligned. And I'm not a huge fan of Klavan, but I do rate Lovren 7 or 8 matches out of 10. Yeah, 2 matches he has howlers, shockers. He makes individual errors. If he cuts them out, I think he can be a really, really good centre-half for Liverpool. And of course, VVD coming in, Matip coming back to fitness. I think though the 4 defenders, I'm fairly happy with the center backs at the moment because of VVD.
So who do you think is going to start for them regularly? Lovren or Matip?
So what Klopp has been doing this season is he's stuck with Klavan because Klavan has been injury free. So that's the good thing about Klavan is he doesn't get injured and he's a really good ball-playing defender. He gets the ball out really well and he brings balance to that left side because he's left-footed as well. So he's been rotating Matip and Lovren because both Matip and Lovren have been suffering injuries. They've been suffering niggles and both of them have not been at their best this season because of those small muscular injuries that they keep on having. Saying that, as soon as Matip comes to full fitness, it's going to be Matip and VVD, in my opinion, as the first choice centre-back pairing, and then either Lovren or Klavan as third and fourth choice, rotating depending on form, injury, schedule, suspensions, etc.
Rounding up the top 6 of the table, we have Spurs, who did not end up playing last game week, but have 2 matches this one. The first one was against Swansea. Well, as per usual, it was a routine win for Spurs there.
The scoreline says it's a routine win. It wasn't exactly a routine win. I think the Swans have improved a lot, and there were 3 pivotal moments in the game, and all 3 went for Spurs and against the Swans. So I feel for the Swans. The first goal that Spurs scored, Llorente against his old club, clear offside. He's a yard offside. So that's a clear mistake that the linesman actually apologized to the Swans boss for. Second one is a rebound. And Dele Alli just puts in his own effort that came back off the keeper. And probably the most important one was when Sanchez should have probably seen a second yellow. He brought down Martin Olsen. And the second yellow would have changed the game because it was 1-0 at that time. So, and then instantly Sanchez went off and Wanyama came on the pitch. So I think Spurs were fairly lucky. I think we owe David Moyes an apology.
I'm not apologizing to him.
Come on, man. I mean,
it's too soon for an apology. I've given him props. That's good enough.
It's not just about the results that he's getting. And he's getting some really good results. That Newcastle one, barring the Newcastle one, he's got some pretty good results. The performances have improved 100-fold. As opposed to against Slaven Bilic, because David Moyes is actually a way better coach. And you can actually see that. It didn't work out for him at Real Sociedad. It didn't work out for him at Sunderland. But I think West Ham is a good fit for him. He has good physical players, tall players. He likes working with, you know, strong physical characters. And
Andy Carroll? I mean, who can resurrect that guy, right? But I think it's too soon for A, us to apologize, firstly, and B, for us to say that West Ham's had a good season. So, remains to be seen. A couple of decisions the past few weeks which have maybe affected the structure of the table, especially for Arsenal and Chelsea's case. And we'll talk a little bit about how that can be changed in our polls and predictions in the next segment. This particular segment, Polls and Predictions, is where you, our listeners, can jump onto our Facebook group, The Football Corner, or reach out on Twitter at Football Babas and let us know what you think about the polls and predictions that we run on a weekly basis. This week's poll is going to be whether VAR should be a thing in the Premier League or not.
So VAR, which is a video assistant referee, is actually being trialed across leagues in Europe. And will also be trialed in an FA Cup fixture coming up, I believe. I feel it's super useful because, you know, you have the chance to review decisions. And the final call is still with the referee, I believe, on the pitch.
Yeah.
But he gets...
He gets told, especially, it's literally like third umpire in cricket, except the third umpire is not making the decision. The right. referee and the third umpire share information. The referee on pitch gets all the information related to whether it was or not, and he basically uses that and takes a decision himself.
I think in other leagues where it's been trialed, they actually have a panel of three people sitting, and if they agree on one particular decision, that's all three of them have to agree, and that's the decision that's taken.
Interesting.
I think that's how it's working. I'm not sure how they're going to implement it here in England.
Obviously, the big drawback of VAR is, or the people who are against VAR's use in football, is that they feel it's a little too disruptive to the game, right? And sometimes a decision takes minutes to make, and that messes with the flow. A lot of managers have come out and said that it messes with the flow of the game. It's akin to maybe the difference in flow that comes up when team wastes time and changes and playing the ball and stuff like that. So some are for it. I'm sure Arsene Wenger is for it. And
definitely. It goes without saying.
Yeah. And then, you know what? He's gonna be for it, and then it's going to come in, and then a decision is going to be made against him, and then he'll be against it. 100%. That's what
I agree with you on there. Like, no question asked.
So the poll we're conducting this week is whether VAR should be a thing in the Premier League ASAP. It's a yes or a no poll there. Because it's already a part of the league that I watch as much as the EPL, which is the Italian league, I've seen how it affects the game on field. You can't take away from the correct decisions that come. Obviously, it's very similar to something like goal line technology, right? You cannot be denied a goal, so you cannot be denied a clear penalty or a clear a foul like that. So I think it's a good thing. Maybe as VAR goes on and on, it has to be introduced, according to me. And maybe as it goes on and on and on, the associations and the referees figure out a way to streamline the amount of time it takes to make a decision. And that, in fact, then should not affect the flow of the game too much. It does 100%. You can see whenever a team is generally more positive and it's getting a lot of attacking opportunities, and then something like a VAR decision comes into play, it disrupts it a little bit. But I think it's a shoe-in. It should be a thing in the English Premier League.
I mean, football's a financial game, right? It's all about money. We're talking about millions of pounds here at stake. Imagine VAR had been employed in that Chelsea versus Barcelona game in 2009. There's no way Barcelona would have gone through in that game. So it affects you moving from semi-finals of the Champions League to the finals, and that's an automatic 20, 25, 30 million euro jump. So A, the money aspect, and then B, it's whether you're for or against the human element. So wherever there's the human element, or we're completely dependent on humans, there's going to be errors because nobody's perfect, and refs most of all have a very difficult job. With VAR coming in, I think, like you said, the momentum of a team will definitely get disruptive. But if at the same time, because of that momentum, say they get a penalty or a free kick decision going for them, or an offside decision that wasn't, I guess they would definitely be for the game. In my opinion, I think goal line technology that's a no-brainer, because that's as quick as can be. It's just a ball crossing a line or not. It's super objective. But VAR takes into account other decisions. So there's intent and what the player is thinking and, you know, the human side of it, which you can't really predict exactly what's going on inside a human's mind. I think offside is definitely something that should be implemented without VAR. It can be done. I think there's enough technology around in terms of AI, algorithms, IoT, that it can totally just be a decision where the referee knows whether it's offside or not and stops play accordingly. And the linesman should probably not even be involved in offside at all because it's, again, something very objective. So I think offside is something that could have been done without VAR, at least at the top level. But I'm guessing it's coming into VAR as well. Because what do you do? I mean, if the linesman blows for offside and play stops and it's onside, you can't get play going again in that exact same position. It's impossible.
Right. And whatever advantage would have been there has gone away.
Has gone because the momentum of the attack is gone. And obviously everybody's, you know, changed their positions. So those are debates that we can keep on having. In saying that, I'm for VAR.
Good points there. Jumping to the prediction that we have for this week, an exciting game next week between Liverpool and Man City.
That will be one hell of a game.
And okay, so what's your prediction for the game?
I'm going for a score draw, 2-2.
A draw?
Yeah, I am going for a draw. I think if there's any team that actually can actually beat City, it's Liverpool. Simply because Liverpool have clinical finishers and ruthlessness at times. And City do give you chances. So if you defend well against them, you have a little bit of luck. They're having an off day. I think Liverpool can beat this team. In saying that, Liverpool are weak at the back. VVD coming in, not coming in. He's probably not going to play that game anyway. I'm going for a 2-2. What about you?
I am going for a City win.
Duh. Wow.
Look, okay. You, as you mentioned, they're weak at the back. VVD is not going to be a factor in this game. Even if he plays, it's going to be his first game for Liverpool. So it's not like Liverpool's just going to become solid all of a sudden. You still have a certain Simon Mignolet in goal. And up against City, I just hope it's not a goal fest for you guys, for City. Pep being Pep, whenever it's a big game, you know how he gears up for these big games. He studies the team. He makes sure everything's drilled in. It's the smaller teams against which City grind out wins. So I don't see this anything apart from a City win. The reverse fixture against these guys, between these guys, was a 5-0 City win. Obviously, that was the game where Mane got that red card, unfortunate red card. The game was pretty even up until the red card, but I don't know, man. Even if Mane would have stayed on, I still think City would have won that game.
Definitely not 5-0, though. It would have been a much tighter contest.
Not 5-0, but 3 points. And I see City getting 3 points from this game as well. As for the scoreline, I don't know. I think Liverpool will definitely get a goal in. I think this will be a 3-1 City.
Well, we'll have to see, won't we?
Yes, we will, Bharat. I'm so pumped. Can we watch this game together? I want to see live reactions of your
face.
Let's
do it, man. Let's do it. Because I'm really emotional when I watch games with Liverpool. Not just because it's Liverpool, but the fact that against a team like City, Liverpool need to be ruthless on the transition. And if they're not, then I'm just going to be going haywire and, you know, going crazy all over the place. So yeah, definitely catch you at the game.
Let's do it. And now we jump to Indian football. What's the word with ISL, Bharat?
Well, the thing that I want to talk about in this episode regarding ISL is Delhi Dynamos is rock bottom form. They're propping up the table. They have 3 points, which was their one solitary win that they had, and they haven't got a single point. They've lost 6 on the spin. That's 6 on the spin. Call out to Mr. Rohan Sharma, who's the director of Delhi Dynamos and seems to be running the club. Apparently, his father's investment firm in the US bought over Delhi Dynamos from Den Networks, and they're the majority shareholders now. So Rohan Sharma is running the club. He doesn't seem to be in Delhi. I think he's gone home for the holidays.
I mean, he did come out with a long note of apology on Twitter a couple of days ago. He tried to explain why they went with what they did. They trying to focus on youth, don't have marquee players on there, and wanted to build a foundation, which is obviously not a bad approach. And he also came out with a tweet saying that he'd take one shitty season and then win championships over finishing in the playoffs season after season and not winning anything, which is the right mentality. And to his credit, man, he did apologize for the debacle that the Dynamos are in right now. And they rock bottom, but it seems like the heart's there, the intent is there. So let's see what happens next season onwards.
I'm inclined to agree with him that, okay, you know what, one shitty season and then win the championship. But A, there's no guarantee you're going to win the championship. The club have a contract with Aspire Academy for developing the youth teams and then moving those players into the first team. So I like the fact that there's a roadmap that's related to youth, me being associated with grassroots for most of my career in sports and football. But one of the things that he's said he's focusing on is actually coming closer to the fan base and actually building a culture in Delhi and promoting football stars from North India. That culture is nowhere to be seen. I've been affiliated with the club in the past and it was pretty poor back then. And I'm not sure they're doing too well in terms of engaging fans in Delhi. Kerala games, the Majapattas, they outnumber Delhi fans. Northeast games, the Northeasterners, they outnumber Delhi fans. So, I mean, that's...
But it's also, you have to give it to him that it's tough to compete with a settled fan base like something from Northeast or from Kerala or from Goa or from Calcutta or Bengal. To compete with them from the get-go is tough. It has to be built towards that. That being said, I see no fan building happening around me because we are living in Delhi. I don't see much of it happening. I don't see the atmosphere there. And I totally understand why the away fans outnumber the home fans in each game.
Exactly, right? You're a Delhi boy, born and brought up here. You spent majority of your life here. Likewise, me. I wasn't in India for my college life, but I came back pretty much after. And there hasn't been much engagement. There's not been anything that's brought me closer to Delhi Dynamos. In fact, with my affiliation, I was actually driven further away because of... That particular culture or lack of culture, so to speak. I'm hoping that Rohan manages to put some wrongs right. And let's see. I mean, honestly, you're talking about established fan bases. Yeah, okay, I'll give you Kerala, Goa, Bengal, although they have their own issues, Bengal, that is, and the Northeast. But Minerva, I would argue Minerva has a bigger following than Delhi Dynamos, and that's shocking. That's absolutely shocking. They're a much smaller club, much smaller in investment. And
they're doing the right things then, I guess.
They're more so focused on youth as well. So, you know, without any disrespect associated, maybe actually see what they're up to and try and implement some of the things they've been implementing in their own model.
Possibly. It could be the right move. Talking about Kerala a little bit, they just sacked their coach, Rene Mullenstein, right? He's former United coach, shown the door. And guess who's back? The model himself, David James.
David James is back. He was a player coach in the last season
yeah,
for Kerala Blasters. And he's just been plucked out of thin air, put into the job, and has been tasked with getting the best out of a certain Dimitar Berbatov, although I doubt that'll happen.
I don't know, man. Is he playing this season as well? Or he's just the coach
now?
No,
I think he's just the coach this season. He's not playing.
Let's see. I don't know. Kerala's been doing all right. They've
been doing okay.
They're not the greatest team there in the league.
Although you can see the dominant teams in the ISL. It's Pune's dominant with Zamrota and Marcelino. They're on fire.
Right.
Goa's pretty good. Chennai obviously dominant and Bengaluru. And then you have the likes of Delhi Dynamos and Northeast United propping up the bottom of the table.
Yeah. Sucks for Rene though. Kind of liked him, but let's see. Let's see if changing the coach has the same effect like it did with maybe West Ham, for example.
Moving on from that sad news to some truly sad news. A Sporting Club de Goa player actually committed suicide a couple of days back.
That's terrible, man.
It's awful. And the club's official statement is that he came back from a party, or the New Year's party rather, in the wee hours of the morning. And then nobody could reach out to him. And then, you know, it's been ruled as a suicide and nobody really knows what's happened. But it's super sad to see, and you do see this from time to time in Indian football because players don't really know where they're going, you know, what direction their career is going in, what's going to happen in terms of the money that they earn from playing the sport that they love. And probably the only thing that they truly know how to do is play football. It happened in 2006 when the former Indian captain VP Sathyan committed suicide. He jumped in front of a train because he had money issues. You know, these things, I'm assuming that was the issue. It could have been something completely different, but no word yet on exactly what's happened there. So we wish the player's family all the best and our condolences.
That's right, man. That's truly, truly terrible news. Aristo Fernandez, rest in peace and condolences to his family. And hopefully the authorities get to the bottom of this, the real reason why it happened. And it's I understand that it's a problem with players, not just in football, but in other sports like basketball. I think hockey and maybe cricket are the only ones that have a stable career. The advent of IPL has kickstarted Kabaddi players' careers and stuff like that. And I hope the advent of ISL also has a positive effect on football players and local club players around the country as well. So that about wraps up this week's episode of the Football Corner. You guys can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, or wherever you guys get your podcasts. Do check out our Facebook group, The Football Corner.
We're trying to get a community going around it. We hope to see lots of posts from you guys there.
Looking forward to that. You can also reach out to us on Twitter at Football Babas. That's at Football Babas. B-A-B-A-S.
Is this a thing that's happening?
It's a thing, man. It's a thing. It's become a thing. It's always going to be a thing. That's how I'm going to introduce it, even if I'm talking to someone on the face.
I like it, bro. I like it.
You can also reach out to us on email. That's tfc@munchermedia.com. Our theme music is provided by Kevin McLeod. You can find all his works on incompetech.com. More details in the show notes. This has been a Muncher Media production. See you guys next time.
Happy New Year, guys. See you soon.